Welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. My name is Trevor Boehm and I will be your host. Every week or so, I try to get myself a fascinating human on the mic for you, someone who looks at the civilized world just like you do and says no thank you. Someone who wants to break some rules, to lead, and to bring their unique vision into the world. Someone for whom the status quo simply will not do. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I do. Please dive in. Hey folks, welcome back to the Uncivilized Podcast. This is Trevor Boehm, your host. And man, oh man, was this an amazing interview. I just had the opportunity to sit down with a man named Eric Hatch, who I was connected with through Than Bardson. And if you guys know the organization, We Are Unseen, which helps with child sex trafficking, which is shocking that that's still a thing, but it's still a thing. Than is the one who runs that. And so he connected me with his buddy, Eric. And I chatted with Eric a couple weeks ago, and we were having this great discussion, and I loved him, super high energy, very, very successful man. And then he dropped something on me that I stopped and said, I would like to interview you. Actually, I think I need to interview you. And that's why this interview took place. So Eric Hatch is a wildly successful realtor, leadership coach, entrepreneur, father, human, man, etc. But like so many men, he wasn't always. And at one point, he lived a very, very dualistic life. And I'll let him get into the details in the interview, but just to give you some insight, he was a gambling addict and a minister at the same time and lived that reality for a number of years. And so I know that this episode is inspirational on a number of levels. Like, you're going to walk away with business advice and financial advice. But I think what's most important is just to recognize how many men, how many women, how many humans, how many of us really have a dual nature or something that we've got deep in our shadow. And the public image may be one thing, but the behind the scenes may be another. And how powerful it is for us all to realize that this is simply part of the human experience. So hang on to your hat for this one. This is an amazing interview. And if you get something out of this, you guys, please help me. Please share this podcast with a couple people who you know. Please go to iTunes or Spotify or whatever it is that you're watching this and leave me a review or leave us a review. This podcast is still something that I pay to do and I love to do. I absolutely love to do it. But I really want to grow it this year and this year especially, because I know that these interviews and these recordings are impactful. I get your emails. I get your letters. I get the DMs on Instagram. I get the reshares. And so I know that I'm actually making a difference. So I'm going to ask you for some help. Please share, please review, and please dive into this amazing interview with Eric Hatch. Eric Hatch, welcome to the Uncivilized Podcast. I know how busy you are. I appreciate you coming on. I think we should first throw a shout out to the single best looking man in the nonprofit sector, Than, for bringing us together.
My heart pitter patter as you're talking about him.
He shot this beautiful video for my guys in the nation. And I just sat there with like my eyes blink, like, oh my God, who is, oh my God, wow, I can't believe he did this. Wow, look at this, look at his hair. So thank you, Than.
Than Bardson's an angelic figure. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Than, for bringing us together. So Eric, for my audience who may not know you, and I know this is kind of an American question, can you drop us your like 1 minute elevator pitch or tell us who you are and what you do in the world before we dive into your story?
You bet. So I'm a husband. I'm a father of two. My kids are 6 and 4. Pretty unbelievable life I get to live. Professionally, I do two main things. I have a few businesses, but they all kind of stem from the same stuff. I'm a realtor by trade. I opened up my own brokerage and now run a real estate team. We produce at a pretty high level, and I'm really proud of what we've done there. 5 or 6 years ago, I spun off and started a coaching company as well, coaching leaders and business people on not just how to make more money. I think that's the easy thing, but rather how to be better people, how to impact your clients in a better way, how to impact your team in a better way. It turns out most people suck at that. telling a great salesperson that, hey, you're going to be a great leader because you know how to sell homes is like, hey, you're really good at at eating fish. I bet you're going to love this bacon, right? Like there's no correlation to it. Right. And so what I found is most people need help as leaders to become more selfless and to create an ecosystem where people don't hate their bosses and hate their worlds.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow. Why do you think there's the, I imagine it's the like, sell them what they want, give them what they need philosophy that people come to you like, cool, I want to make seven figures. How do you deal with the gap between someone who's like, actually, bro, I just want to make more fucking money. And you're like, well, you will if you stop being a douche and actually learn how to manage humans. How do you manage that? I imagine there's some resistance when people are like, wait, I have to do my own work.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a switch when somebody switches from being the producer, and you can make a ton of money in real estate as a producer, right? Commissions are high. If you know what you're doing, you're going to get halfway to that million. And then the idea is, you know what, all I need to do is hire 10 people and they're all going to sell houses like I do. And it's going to be this magical solution. And that's how I'm going to get to $1 million. And after that year that they hired 10 people, they made 400,000 instead of 500,000. They're like, what in the world? How did this come to be? And it's because success through others is the sweetest success, but it's the hardest success. And so it's transitioning them from making their clients a priority to making their team a priority. And so it's that pivot for somebody who has been as an entrepreneur and as a salesperson only linear in winning for themselves to having to shift and evolve to win for their team and to make sure that those people are successful. And when that happens, they'll find their success.
Wow, wow, wow.
I identify it, Trevor, as the messy middle, right? Most people see where they want to go and they're stuck in this messy middle point and they don't know how to get out. And that's as a coach where I come in and deliver some triage help.
What do you think is the biggest sticking point in that middle, Eric, in your experience? Because I get it. I get a lot of guys who are like, you know, I'll use a jiu-jitsu analogy. They're like, they're stuck at purple belt and they're stuck at purple belt for 10 years, even though they can see, like, I know what the black belt is and I'm definitely not a white belt, but I just don't know what else to do.
I think people are trying to do the same thing and get different results.
Okay.
So if you're that purple belt and you're stuck there, you're probably doing the same workouts and you're going through the same practices and hoping that all of a sudden one day it clicks. And for most people in the messy middle, they hire those 10 agents or they bring on those 10 team members and they're trying to get their way to it. And so that doesn't work. So they're like, well, maybe if I bring on 15 instead of 10 people, then it's going to magically work. And it doesn't. There's a rule. It's called the rule of threes and tens. It's a leadership rule. And so when an ecosystem goes from 1 to 3, 3 to 10, 10 to 30, 30 to 100, of course, that can permeate and you can have 28 or 32 if you're at that 30. But an entire ecosystem, I think, has to evolve and change when you hit those levels.
Oh.
And so when you hit 10 people, you as the business owner, you can still be really important to those 10 people. But if you want to get to 30, you have to actually start thinking, well, who are we at 3? And who are we at 10? And you have to recreate a smaller ecosystem within your larger ecosystem, which means development of other leaders, which doesn't happen overnight. It means a massive intention and attention to getting the right people in the right seats. There are years and seasons. I think of just financially, and I'm not financially motivated as much as I am impact motivated. Don't get me wrong. I'm still financially motivated, but I want to impact and influence. And I go back to what I made in 2014. It was more than I made in 2015, 16, 17, 18, and 19. Right? 2020 was a huge breakthrough year for me. Okay. And my other entities made me money, but my actual real estate company, I had 5 years of making less and less every year because I was having to pay other people to lead and I had to pay for their mistakes and I had to pay emotionally and literally for them to develop. And so many people are unwilling to take that 5 steps back for 50 steps forward because all they see is the 5 steps back.
Oh, wow. And so why do you think what happened in 2020 that was the breakthrough? Was it just time? Was it just like time and pressure? Or was there something that you can point to and say that was the eruption point or that was the differentiation point?
Yep. Sitting in idle, lukewarm porridge or whatever it may be sucks. I'm a Jesus guy, right? And scripture says that sure. when something's lukewarm, you're supposed to spit it out.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And I was lukewarm for 5 years, and I had a conversation with a partner in my coaching company. His name's Robbie. And he called me out on a blind spot. He's like, dude, you used to be on fire. Like, you would cast vision and you would do big things and take big risks, and you were inspired yourself, but you were inspiring everybody else. And lately you've just been managing. We had a couple of years of triage of pain and grossness that we had to work through, right?
Sure.
If I get dropped off a boat 5 miles offshore and I'm taken on water and I can barely breathe, I don't care about the lighthouse I'm trying to swim to. Right. I just needed to breathe. And a couple of years I was breathing because of internal strife of our business. But then when I finally caught a breath, I had to regain my bearings. And Robbie's like, where's your lighthouse? Where are you swimming to? And what's your vision? And the moment he's like, get active with vision. I started reading a bunch of books. I started praying. I started meditating. And I'm like, I got some big ideas. Different than what anybody else had done in real estate. And I was ready to try some big things. Wow. And so for 6 months, I cast the vision. I won the people over. We worked on recruiting and hiring. Our business has grown in the last 18 months. We've about doubled our business, and we were already like a powerhouse, right?
Wow.
And it's been so much damn fun, Traver. I've loved almost every minute of it. I'm losing more hair because of it, because it's stressful. But I'm feeling strong. You know what I mean?
Good man. I love it. Eric, for a guy who's listening to this and goes, okay, I'm just getting my chin above water.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about a lighthouse. I just need to take a couple breaths here. What's your advice on not staying there? I'm not being like, cool, you've been treading water now for 2 years. We get it. You can breathe, but you got to look for the vision. What's the motivational advice for him?
I don't think that people realize how painful it is to stay the same. I get so much joy watching my kids, right? My daughter's 6, my son's 4. And we just had a review from my son's daycare. And the teacher said, this kid's like a protege. And my son is a little a-hole. You know what I mean? Like, he's funny and sarcastic, but he's like a dinosaur that just destroys everything and doesn't listen. Yeah. And so I know him to be a little shit, you know?
Right.
And they're like, they're going through this report card of like all these assessment things, and they're showing like, look at, he's outperforming every other kid in his class. And I'm like, man, that's not me. Cause like, I love him, but like, I'm not counting to 100 with him every day. Like, his school is doing that, but he's absorbing this. And I get this feeling of overwhelming satisfaction. Cause I'm watching him progress. Right. The number one thing that leads to satisfaction in life and work, whatever it may be, is the feeling of progression. That you're getting somewhere, that you're improving, that you're making a change. The problem is people go to the gym for a month and they don't see maximum results. And so they stop.
Right.
And so people are always looking for things, but the problem is they're looking at the lighthouse. I need them to look at 10 yards from now. I need them to see what's that incremental step that's like 5 strokes ahead that'll remind me I'm getting somewhere. And so I see that with my son, that he's getting somewhere, and I'm so proud. And for me, when I started to cast this vision, the lighthouse that's 5 miles away, that mattered. And that's still what I'm swimming towards. And in fact, the closer I get, the farther away it sometimes feels.
Yeah,
I get that. But I'm acknowledging all the landmarks along the way. Right. And that would be my advice to people that are listening is what landmarks are along the way that says I'm moving in the right direction.
Okay.
And so if you're sitting idly by, I promise you, if you're frustrated with life, one of the reasons why I think you're probably frustrated is because you're not progressing. You're not going somewhere. I fear, Trevor, being 70 years old, retired, sitting around with my feet up, doing the same shit every day.
Yeah.
Talking about what used to be. Right. I fear it.
Yeah. It's like men, especially, we have this tussle between tension and freedom. Like, we all fantasize about the day that we become billionaires and never have to work again and never have to do anything. And then I tell guys, like, you'll probably be cool with that for about a week. And then you're going to be bored out of your mind, right? Yeah. Like, you'll go on a cool vacation and they'll be like, okay, I'll start a nonprofit or something. And then halfway through that, be like, man, can't wait till this thing reaches a point where I can just kick back and let it run itself. It's that dance back and forth, it feels like, between tension and relaxation. Eric, was this always your idea? Like, were you a real estate guy from the beginning? Is this something that you've always dreamt about?
No, so I graduated from college, and my dad was never in the picture, abandoned my family when I was two. So I was a mama's boy through and through. And when I was 16, my mom got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, fought it for 5 years. When I was 21, she died. And so I was orphaned at 21. And lived in Fargo, North Dakota my whole life, and was a church kid growing up and active in college, and my church just totally put me under their wing. And it was so awesome. So when I graduated from college, I went into the ministry. So I was doing full-time youth ministry, worship leading, that sort of did that from 2003 to 2011. Okay. Met my wife there. We got married there. And then I got into real estate full-time in 2011 because I was broke. Right. I had made massive financial mistakes and blunders. And the only way I could get out of it was if I didn't have a $40,000 a year job. And also my wife was battling pretty major infertility, and we really wanted to be parents. And the only way I could be a dad is if I funded it. And so real estate was a vehicle for me to become a dad. And it was a way for me to get out of the problems that I had created. And so that's how I ended up here.
Are you open to sharing some of the massive financial blunders that you have?
I knew you were going to ask.
As a minister.
Yeah. So understand this. Like, there's a gal on Ellen. I don't watch Ellen, but I think I saw it on some sort of clip. But she was talking to Ellen, and she said something like, well, I love Jesus, but I love beer and I swear a little. I'm like, that's my girl, right? Like, that's just perfect. this old 80-year-old granny rocking. Yeah. And so even when I started in the ministry, I remember I worked at a Lutheran church, ELCA, and I would go out. I was 23 or 24 years old. I would go out with friends, but like, I wouldn't drink publicly because like image, and I didn't want kids to get this idea, even though it was legal and healthy and safe for me. I had a mature faith in some senses, but super immature and insecure that I wanted to have this image of who I was.
Right. And you're saying you're 23 years old at the time.
Yeah, correct.
You're pretty young. Okay.
Yeah, I cared and still do cared so much about other people's opinions. If you know the DISC profile, I'm a high I. I love the spotlight. I love the sound of my own voice. I'm paper thin. You know, like I grew up with a sea of estrogen, and so if somebody speaks poorly of me, like it crushes me. I'm working on that because it's my own self-worth stuff. But yeah. I was an insecure little kid without a mommy and a daddy, and so I looked to get my validation elsewhere. And so I tried to be this picture perfect, squeaky clean guy. But when my mom died when I was 21, and I grew up with one foot in welfare. Like we were trailer trash for a while, then lived in a dumpy apartment. Then my dad got knocked off a roof and broke his back. He was a construction worker. All of a sudden when that happened, we got 8 years of unpaid child support, which allowed us to move into a 2-bedroom townhouse for the first time. And that's how I grew up, right? And as I'm growing up, my mom didn't have much money. She worked 3 jobs just so I didn't have to wear Payless shoes. Turns out I liked Payless shoes, so screw that. But as we found it, when she died, she had some life insurance tucked away that allowed me to pay off my student loan debt, pay off my car, buy out my sister's portion of the townhome, like 10 or 15,000 bucks. And then I had about $30,000 left over. I took 20 grand and I tucked it into IRAs and life insurance things because I wanted to be able to give my kids what my mom gave me. And then I had 10 grand left over as a 21-year-old. And I'm like, what am I going to do with 10 grand? And I'm like, man, I really like gambling. So maybe I had some buddies that were gambling online and playing. And so I started playing online poker. And fast forward, so I'm in college now, and
so this is at 21. Because
yeah,
first of all, the fact that you put money in an IRA at 21 does speak to this duality of very mature.
Yeah,
like, oh, I'll have an IRA as opposed to like now I have an IROC and it's purple and I just rip around Fargo in an IROC. Okay, yeah. So you've been a little bit of online, and this is what year I imagine?
2001, like the moneymaker poker boom.
Yeah. So it's just coming online, right? It's just a thing. Yeah.
Yep. So I start playing just casually, but I'm 21. I'm single. I'm living in the house I grew up in with a couple of roommates. We're partying hard at night. I don't have any cares and responsibilities besides school, because I was student body vice president of North Dakota State University at the time, right? I quit that because my world was in shambles. Mm. I was vice president of my fraternity. I quit that. And I'm just like, I just need to heal. And so I drank a ton. I partied a ton and I gambled a ton, but I was really good at gambling.
Yeah. I just need to heal. So I drank a ton and gambled a ton. Right?
So that was how it started. 6 months into it, I got my head right. I went to the wellness center on campus and I ran a mile for the first time in my life. It was the day before Thanksgiving, 2001. And I was like jiggling everywhere and sweating au jus and gravy. Like, it was this nasty experience because it was just so painful. I bet you weren't expecting an au jus reference, but here we go.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
But I decided I needed to start taking better care of myself, right?
Yeah.
I care about what other people think. Mm. And I needed to look good to start feeling good because I was dead on the inside. You know, I lost everything in my world and I was just totally shook.
Right.
And so I start working out. Fast forward 9 months, I run the Twin Cities Marathon in 2002. Wow. The first race I've ever ran in my life. I've done a couple shit, half marathons since.
And, wow. Yeah.
So Trevor, I'm 41 now. I had my knee replaced a year and a half ago. I had my hip replaced 5 years ago. I blame that marathon for all that. But
I have a sort of casual saying that running is for people who don't know how to fight. So yeah, I don't do it anymore. Right?
I'm a pussy. I don't know how to fight. So I just ran. And I'm still gambling through this though, right? Like, okay. I am this constant conflict of super healthy, super successful, and yet I'm my own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a self-destructor.
Right.
And still to this day, it's my demon. And thank goodness I have a lot of accountability partners in my life. Mm-hmm. And I give everybody full transparency into my stuff to make sure that I can't slip up, because give me shadows and I'll be deceitful in them. Not because I'm intentionally trying to do that, but because it's habitual and it's really tough to break.
That's how you're wired. Yeah.
And so now I graduate from college. I get an offer to go and work at the church that I'm baptized and raised in. I'm working with kids. I want this image of Eric as this squeaky, clean, unbelievable person.
Yeah.
And I get this job and I've developed some irresponsible spending habits at the age of 23.
Okay.
Right. I was a bartender and a waiter. And I was making good money. And I went to the church and made $24,000 a year.
Okay.
As a college educated guy, I would make that in 20 hours a week working at the bar.
Sure. 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 And I think a lot of that's cash too. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was like tax-free money.
Yeah.
give me some of that now. Holy cow. Sign me up.
Seriously. We should all just moonlight as bartenders, right?
Those are the days. But immediately, even when I was attending bar in college, I'm like, I'm pretty good at this gambling stuff and I'm making cash. So now I'm spending cash, right? You have cash in your pocket. I had no financial role models in my life ever.
Right.
I had nobody that taught me any business acumen, any budgeting. I just knew you lived frugal. And all of a sudden, as a 21-year-old, 22-year-old with no role models, I was irresponsible with my cash, but I was really good at gambling and I knew I could go make more tomorrow.
Wow. Okay.
And what's interesting about gambling is it's a weird addiction. Cause like, if you have a meth addiction, you can't go like take more meth to get rid of the meth problem you created yesterday.
Right.
But in gambling, I could go and try to play again to make up for the mistake that I made yesterday.
Right. That makes sense.
And the burn that I did. So I started the church. I'm full time. I'm making $24,000 a year. And all of a sudden I got no cash.
Oh, wow.
And so I go to where I know I can make money and I turn myself into a professional gambler at the age of 23, while being a full-time youth minister and worship leader. And this is what nobody knows. I have a couple of buddies that I talk to about poker, but otherwise online, I'm this like anonymous, nobody knows me. And, man, I made 50 grand my first year. I was so scared. I filed taxes on that money, Trevor. I was just like, the government's out to get me. They're watching out for this $24,000 a year youth pastor.
They know.
That's right.
Wow. So I appreciate you sharing all that, man. But you're speaking to what is so many people's real challenge. Is we can say it's good and evil. We can say it's dark and light. We can say it's the shadow. We can say, you know, primal divine, however we want to frame it. I think there are a lot of people who live very different lives in the spotlight and out of the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And even more so if they are in the spotlight, such as you are, as you know, even if it's a small town, you're a public figure of that town. You're the minister. Like, what's the saying? The brighter the spotlight, the deeper the shadow. And so how did you unify those, or integrate them, or individuate them, or put them together? Was there a breaking point? Was there like a service on a Sunday morning where you're like, hey, I'm JR7523 on Poker RS, and I'm pretty much a big deal, and I need to come clean here. Like, how did you bring this to light?
Yeah. So what was a skill game turned into an addiction for me.
Okay.
And I started playing, you know, I was playing, if you know anything about poker, I was playing 1-2, 2-4, and 3-6 no limit games. So not huge stakes, a few $100 at the table, and I would grind, and I could double my money if I really worked hard that day. You know, I'd sit down with 300, and after a few hours, I'd have $600. I'm like, hey, that's great money.
Yeah.
And so I started playing the rush. So I started playing 5-10 and 10-20 no limit games, and I'd sit down with $1 or $2,000 while making $24,000 a year. I sat down and I'd lose it. And then I'd immediately give a credit card number and get $500 more cash out of that. And so it started to spin out. And so what I made money on my first 2 years, then it started decrescendoing. And then it just got out of control and I wasn't even watching it. I got married in the middle of this. Wow. My wife, I think most of us operate that are addicts. Most of us operate with the rule of 10%. I had 2 beers. No, you had 20.
Right.
I jerked off once. No, you jerked off 10 times. Like, right. I tell her I lost $100 and I really lost 1,000. And so I wasn't truthful in that relationship. And I had an affair behind my wife's back with money and gambling. Mm. And so it was a secret mistress. Mm. So fast forward now, it's 2008. I'm full-time in the ministry. I'm part-time in real estate. I'm DJing wedding dances. I'm giving guitar lessons. I'm putting together slideshow presentations for people that are graduating. I'm doing everything I can to make a buck because my sixth job of gambling is costing me tens of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
And so I remember there was a nonprofit I started while working at the church called Homeless and Hungry. It was a 30-hour simulation of being homeless. And so we'd get kids and adults alike to fast for 30 hours, to sleep outside in a cardboard box, to fundraise, to do service projects. And we raised about $1 million in my time of doing that. Just an awesome thing. I remember, because North Dakota is weird, I remember going to the local bar on my lunch break to play blackjack. The local bars in town have charitable gaming blackjack. And I remember taking a call from somebody who was looking to make a donation to help these homeless people while I'm losing hundreds of dollars on my lunch break while working at the church. Wow. And I stepped away, looked over, doubled down, split my hand, whatever I did, lost $100 on one hand, accepted $100 for the charity, and went back to the table as soon as they hung up.
Wow.
And I was so caught and stuck. And finally, the thing that broke me was I went out of town and DJed a dance in a small town in Minnesota. And I called my wife and I lied to her. And I said, I'm really tired. I'm just going to get a hotel room for the night. And instead, I went to a casino and I gambled all night. And I lost a bunch of cash, lost a couple $1,000. And I'm like, oh, I can't do this anymore. And I drove home. I didn't sleep, but I was wide-eyed. You know, I'd been up for 24 hours, but I was as awake as I'd ever been. Mm. 2 weeks later, I came clean to her and I told her what I had done. I had racked up behind her back, after all the money I had made, I had racked up $70,000 in credit card debt and another $10,000 in a second mortgage on her house, all of money she didn't know about. And my wife's a teacher. I'm a youth pastor. And we're bringing in total, maybe $4,000 a month. And we have about $8,000 a month in credit card bills.
Wow. This is wild, isn't it? I love this interview. I hope you did too. I want to take a moment and share with you guys a weekend event that I have coming up June 3rd through June 6th, just outside Denver, Colorado, with my good friends, Dewey Freeman and Michael Gay, both of whom have been guests on the podcast. And this is a men's only weekend called The Uncivilizing. And we are taking a group of men and we are running them through the best of each of our practices, Like you get three high-powered teachers, high-powered coaches, two very, very wildly successful therapists, and a group of other men all living under the same roof for 3 days as we jam and we work through the primal elements of masculinity and the divine elements of masculinity in what is going to be a fabulous initiation for any man who shows up. So if you're interested in this, even if you're a woman, please share this, but go to www.manuncivilized.com/the-uncivilizing. Okay, back to Eric. Eric, can we back up maybe 30 seconds and just ask, how was that experience for you of living those two lives? Like, what was that like as your day to day? Was it bypassing? Was it constantly pretending not to feel? Like, how did you exist in your own body during all of that?
Shame was real.
Yeah.
It was, my self-worth was so lost.
I bet. Yeah.
I would seek out, and the only thing I was standing on, Traver, was the validation I got from other people.
Oh,
because
wow.
I was a freaking good youth pastor.
Yeah.
Right? I made a big difference in the lives of kids in that church, and I'm proud of what I did.
Yeah.
But the only validation I got was from them, and what I saw in the mirror was the most disgusting person I could see.
Ooh. Were you just riddled with anxiety? Like, that someday this whole house of cards is going to fall?
I thought I could work my way out of it.
Yeah. The delusion of the addiction, huh?
Yeah. It's when I came clean June 5th, 2008, it was my last day of gambling. And then when I told my wife, and then she's like, I need to call my dad. Scariest words your wife can ever say, by the way. her dad's a judge, by the way, Traver, right?
Yeah.
So here comes my father-in-law, the judge. Right. Coming over, and he said something to me that I will never forget. And I've told him this, even recently. He said, to my wife, Emily, it's not a matter of if Eric will stumble and fall. It's a matter of when.
Oh, wow.
He's going to do this again.
Mm.
And I'm like, fuck you. No, I'm not. Like, for me, that was really, I've never had any male figures in my life, and to have somebody challenge me like that,
right,
gave me like a fuck you, I can do this kind of mentality. But even so, the only way I saw my way out of it was work. You know, I could have filed for bankruptcy. I could have just thrown in the towel, and that for me didn't seem like an option.
Yeah.
God has gifted me with a resilience and a tenacity, and the easy way is not the right way. Mm. Anytime. The hard way is the tougher way, and it's the way in which I wouldn't have what I have now if I took the easy way out.
Sure.
I risk every day.
Before we hop forward to how you recovered from that, a lot of guys listening to this are either have a conversation like yours that they're facing or have had one. Can you walk us through a bit of what was going on inside of you when you sat down and said, okay, hon, I have something I have to tell you?
So my wife was out. I don't remember where she was. And I had just been riddled with so much guilt. I had been wearing guilt for 5 years, having this secret affair behind my wife's back with gambling and money. And it was to a point where I knew that I needed help. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do it on my own. And that just felt shameful in and of itself. As I've matured as a man, the strongest people I know are the ones that ask for help.
For sure.
And the ones that say, I can't do this on my own. And so she came home and I was curled in a ball and weeping. And so she comes in trying to protect me.
Mm.
And I love her for that. Yeah. And I had to tell her, no, I hurt you and I messed up our whole life. More than you ever know.
Wow.
And I got to say it, and then I had to live in it. Mm. And for the people that are listening that have to have some sort of conversation like that, it feels better once you say it, even though now the consequences are real.
Yeah.
I thought my wife would leave me. She stayed with me. Thank God. I thought I would never get out of this financial pickle. I'm a multimillionaire now. Like it's fascinating to see what happens, because what I imagined as worst case scenario never came true.
Mm.
And I feel so much, this is like taking a big shit, Traver, right? You feel the pressure, it's building up. You're like, you let it out. And you're like, there's so much mess to clean up, but I feel so much better.
Mm.
And there was so much mess to clean up. but I felt so much better. And
yeah,
it's a time I don't ever want to go back to, but it's a time I need to remember all the time.
Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing it. This is something that isn't talked about a lot in the male world, is just dealing with what's real and facing what's real, even though what's real is hard. But I agree with you that there's almost a relief when you go, okay, now at least we get to play with what's real. And now at least we can make actual change, not fantasy change or avoid change. So good for you. I really, really appreciate you sharing it so openly. What was day one, Eric? What was like, okay, we've had it. We've had the conversation. My father-in-law said this. I'm now determined as fuck to change things. What happened the next morning?
So if you're familiar with StrengthsFinder, my top strategy is I'm an activator. So like I will just get shit done. My number two strategy, or my number two strength is that I'm strategic, right? So I had a plan.
Mm.
My wife threw some extra things on that plan, right? deservingly so. She had some extra things to add. But I went to Gamblers Anonymous, and I got to tell you, walking into a place like that, there's something amazing about AA and NA and Gamblers Anonymous is you walk in and you realize like, I'm not the only schmuck.
Right.
And there's misery can love company, but also to see that like, just that feeling that I'm not alone is unbelievable. And I pray and I hope that this conversation y'all are listening to right now, you get that feeling that you're not alone, because there's power in that. And 100%. So I went to Gamblers Anonymous. I went and got counseling myself personally. My wife got counseling. We got marriage therapy counseling together. We created a plan of our finances and how we're going to review them and look at them. I had to go into a place to get some financial counseling and management because, again, we had more bills than we had money coming in. And we were able to, like, I never, through all this, Trevor, I didn't miss a single payment. I rocked an 800 credit score through all this.
Wow. Yeah.
Because again, image mattered to me. And I wanted to, like, I was willing to die on the inside to maintain this image of wholeness for the rest of the world.
Wow. Okay.
And so because of that, like we were able to rebound quickly. I got to work as a realtor because I was part-time and I realized this was my fastest vehicle out of here. Mm-hmm. Turns out I knew how to sell some houses. And so I worked 90 to 110 hours a week from 2008 until 2014.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. So you do have some resilience in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it fueled by like, I need to redeem myself, or was it fueled by, holy shit, I'm pretty good at this and I actually can make some money and I found something that allows me to be me, or a mix of both?
Yeah, it's a both and. I oftentimes use the language, am I running from something or am I running towards something?
Yeah.
And I was running from my mistakes and I knew that I had to get far, far away from who I was in that moment. But I also saw and I started to understand who God created me to be.
Okay.
And that my playing small, my curling up in a corner, that's no good for anybody. I'll say this is in late 2013, early 2014, I made a pretty bad business move and business decision. I aligned with the wrong person. And in one moment's time, I lost $130,000 by that person's selfishness. And I called my coach. And I'm like, Steve, man, I'm so crushed and I'm crying and I'm disheveled. And he's like, Eric, you have every right whatsoever to feel bad, to feel frustrated, to be on your pity pot. You've earned your spot on that pity pot. Right? He said, you sit on that throne as long as you want.
Mm.
You have to understand your wife and your team are waiting for you to show up and be the man that you're supposed to be.
Ooh, I like this guy.
Yeah. And so he said, when you choose to get off that pity pot, you don't revisit it.
Right.
And that was January 14th, 2014. And I haven't revisited it since. I'm done feeling bad for myself.
Right.
The man I see in the mirror now, Trevor, is a man that I love and respect. I see the flaws and the warts that I still want to work on, but I am proud of who I am for this world and for my family and for my team, but I'm proud of who I am for myself. And I hadn't been able to say that until the last couple of years.
Good for you. I think that's, it's worth billions. It's worth everything. Because yeah. I've worked for billionaires who hated themselves. Mm-hmm. I've worked for billionaires whose marriages were an absolute disaster, who have literally said, I wouldn't trade places with you. And this is when I was making $12 an hour. Mm-hmm. So I think that is absolutely priceless. Thank you for that. Yeah. Would you mind sharing a bit of the philosophy now that you've brought in that would, because you've gone from, okay, I was below white belt. I fought my way back up to white belt. I actually fought my way to purple belt. I fought my way to black belt. Now I'm revising what it means to actually be a black belt. Mm-hmm. How did you then go from I'm crushing shit to I'm expansive? I'm building an empire more than like wealthy versus, okay, I'm rich. I can sell this many houses. Like it feels like you've entered a different, you've passed through a membrane of sorts into a different way of being around success.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. So let me identify wealth first, because I think a lot of people associate riches with wealth. And I think that they're two different things. I think that riches are an abundance of money. And I think that part of wealth is enough money. Certainly an abundance is desired, but it's having enough to feel like the world's not going to come crashing down if you miss a month of a paycheck, right?
Right.
So abundance of finances and resources are number one. Number two is ingrainment in the right culture while the pursuant of purpose is aligned.
Ooh, say more about that if you would. I think that's okay. A juicy sentence.
You can have all the money in the world. If you don't have a purpose behind what you do and clarity for why you're doing it, if you're surrounded by a bunch of douche nuggets who are just painfully annoying, that money, those riches, that wealth, or those resources, that means nothing.
Right.
Right. The number three. So number one is the abundance of resources and money. Number two is the ingrainment in the right culture during the pursuance of purpose. And number three is time. I know a lot of people that have a lot of money and surrounded by a lot of people with purpose, but they don't have time in their life and they are the most broke people I know.
Oh, wow. That's a sentence.
Yeah. I think if you were to tell me which of the three is the most broke, you're going to combine this. So you can have money and time, but you don't have purpose or culture. Mm. You can have money and culture, but you don't have time. Or you can have time and culture, but you don't have money. Mm. I'll take that last one every day of the week, Trevor.
Right, right.
And so many people, when they talk about wealth, they really are thinking riches only.
Yeah.
And so for me, as I've grown this now, I can proudly say I work 50 hours a week instead of the 90 to 110. And I am an incredible father and husband and servant for those. I have some great friends. Our friend Than, of course, is one of them, right? And so I get to have these really special moments in life. And so to your question now of what I'm looking at, how I'm getting there, is I've really started to pay attention to the crowd that I run with. The brotherhood or sisterhood of people. I told you earlier in this that I'm fearful of being, you know, 70 years old and talking about what was. Mm. And it's the reason why I hate family reunions and hate high school reunions. It is because you go and you talk about what life was like 20 years ago and people remind you of who you were. Right. And you can have some great relationships within that, but I want to talk about what's going to be. And I want to be surrounded by big dreamers, big thinkers, people who are challenging me in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah.
And so what is it saying that you're only as good as the five people you surround yourself with, right? I'm really cautious about who I spend my time with. And even so, this is maybe my greatest leadership philosophy that I've learned in the last 3 years. There's a book called The Pumpkin Plan by Mike Michalowicz. And in there, he talks about how if you want to grow these world-class pumpkins that are like the 2,000-pound everybody takes a picture with, these unbelievable things, there's seven steps to do so. But the sixth step is spend all your time with the big pumpkins. Mm. And in my ecosystem, one of the ways in which we started to cast this great vision is I went to my top people who we usually say, they got it. I don't need to spend any time with them now. They know what they're doing. And you abandon them.
Yeah.
I started spending all my time with them and them only. And my whole world feels so much better. And it's so much more satisfactory because now we're big dreamers doing even bigger things together to impact our world. Yeah. Right. And so I'm doing that internally. I'm doing that externally. And I am unapologetic of dreaming big, because this world is going to be a lot better because I'm a part of it.
Fuck yeah, man. That's epic and super helpful. I think we've all heard that quote, you know, and yet I know a lot of people who, when they begin to make transformations, the biggest challenge is, but what about my friends? You know, I've run a number of sobriety programs, or even just thrown it out there. Sobriety wasn't a big journey for me, but it was something, a decision I made. Mm-hmm. And so talking about it publicly, people are like, but what about your friends? What about when people ask you why you're not drinking anymore? It's like, I just don't drink anymore. Mm-hmm. And if someone really doesn't want to hang out with you because you don't drink anymore, you might want to take a really solid look at that relationship. Mm-hmm. My best core friends were like, cool, awesome, you want some kombucha? Right. And that was the discussion, and that was really it. And so that's awesome and truly, truly amazing. I appreciate everything you've shared on this. For people who want to get more information about you, or perhaps hire you, or take your courses and what you're doing, where can they find you? Where do you hang out? Where can people get more Eric Hatch?
So check out, I put my name on everything because I'm pretty not clever. So my companies are Hatch. My companies are Hatch Realty and Hatch Coaching. I'm like Colonel Sanders, man. I'm not even in the kitchen anymore. I just put my face on things and take all the credit. And so hatchcoaching.com is probably the best place that has a lot of my leadership stuff. And also check out our YouTube channel. Just go to Hatch Coaching's YouTube channel. Everything's for free. We do a bunch of webinars. And I know I'm a realtor, but about half the stuff I put out there is just leadership and self-development things.
I love it. Truly, thank you for this. This was quite an honor just to hear, but what I know is that you and I will never know the one guy who heard this and went, oh shit, okay, I think I may need to go to AA or NA or GA or one of them. So I appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it is a joy. You're doing good work.
Thank you, sir. This is Trevor Boehm signing off on another episode of the Uncivilized Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please give us a share, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you're interested in getting a hold of my book, Man Uncivilized, whether you're a man or a woman, please go to www.manuncivilized.com/the book and get reading.